This is Paul Beston, Associate Editor of City Journal, and I'm talking today with Nicole Gelinas, a contributing editor of the magazine, about her story in our winter 2013 issue, which is called New York's Sandy Scorecard, and it examines the government response to last fall's superstorm. Hi, Nicole.
Good afternoon, Paul.
Now, soon after the storm, both Governor Cuomo and Mayor Bloomberg made moves to set up, blue ribbon commissions and set up formulate action plans for the future on how to both study the response and plan for the future. And they kept emphasizing this idea of rethinking, rethinking what we're doing regarding this. But you write in what I kind of took as the main theme of the story, quote, "What really needs rethinking is the state and local politics that have created dysfunctional agencies and funded them nonsensically." Can you expand on that?
Yes, exactly. There's this misconception that disasters really change things about how the government was working. In other words, if you were doing a good job, all of a sudden it's going to overwhelm you and you'll suddenly be doing a bad job. That's not true, thankfully, and we've seen this in several disasters. We saw it after 9/11, we saw it after Katrina in New Orleans, and we've seen it again after Hurricane Sandy shortly before Halloween 2012. What happens is if the government is working well to begin with, it will continue to work well after the storm. If the government was not working well, it will continue to not work well. And you see this both in the immediate response and you see it in the long-term rebuilding as well. And, after 9/11, the example of that was how well the city responded in terms of emergency response in the first few days, weeks, and months after the attack, but then how poorly the state did in the long-term rebuilding process. And these were two splits in the government we had seen for decades before this: good at local city emergency response, very bad at long-term planning and infrastructure spending. So we saw it again in Katrina. New Orleans government was doing very poorly before the storm, just at, securing the public safety, did very badly afterwards. And we saw the same splits here. Agencies that were doing well, like the Metropolitan Transportation Agency, Con Ed, not a government agency, but a big private sector agency, right. The city's emergency response, things like the NYPD, did very well. And agencies that did very poorly, Long Island Power Authority, New York City Housing Authority, they did poorly after the storm as well. And the danger is that as we get into the long-term rebuilding phase, the state will have the same problems of not spending this $30 billion on the right things.
So what are, briefly, some of the agencies that did well? I mean, you mentioned the MTA, which is something New Yorkers don't always hear happy things about. So what were some of the things that the MTA did well? And then, on the darker side of the spectrum, what was going on at LEPA and at NYCHA?
Well, the MTA really made the governor look good after Sandy. And why? It's really not a surprise. It's not as if they were doing poorly for the years before Sandy and suddenly the storm spurred them to do well. For many years, this really goes back to the Spitzer administration, the state has made it more of a priority to deliver better transit service, and it shows. And why did the state do this? Not out of the goodness of its heart, but it was under increasing pressure from social media, from good government groups that got a lot more vocal about this, and from different groups, whether on the left, on the right, or the middle, that really made a concerted effort over the past half decade to say the MTA is not an unaccountable public authority. It is the governor who is responsible for this agency. So if you want to blame somebody for fare hikes, for bad service, you blame the governor. Don't blame the MTA. And that has worked. And so they've done a better job, partly because of gubernatorial direction. Things like drilling for a storm. You've got to have these plans in place years and years before something happens. Tagging all of the infrastructure inside the tunnel so they know, what is this? Can we take it out before the storm to protect it from flooding and put it back? They had a good idea of these things, so there weren't too many surprises when they had the subway tunnels and the motor vehicle tunnels flood. They were able to get service back up and running in a pretty quick time frame.
And, of course, they'd close them ahead of time,
yes,
which is a big piece,
yeah,
of that, too.
That was important, too. First of all, you have good luck, I guess, although it's a weird thing to say about such a terrible event. But you know that a hurricane is coming. You've got a few days' notice. So they made the political decision to close the system the Sunday before Sandy hit, gave them time to bring equipment to high ground. And, you know, there's a risk to doing that, because if you close the system, then there's no storm. Everyone's going to say you inconvenience people, you didn't let people get to work, all of those things. But, you know, they made a good decision, backed up by the governor, and that worked out.
Right. And then on the LEPA, Long Island Power Authority side, there's just a whole history of managerial and fiscal problems there, right, in terms of their ability to perform even before a crisis comes.
Yes, and LIPA is a state agency. They are responsible for electricity, not only on Long Island, obviously, but also for the parts of Queens which were the hardest hit, the Rockaways. So they really fell down on the job. You know, very poor communication with people on how do they report that the power is out? Can they track when the power might be on? You know, having someone say, oh, it might be a week, it might be 2 weeks, just doesn't help if you're thinking, should I try to move my family away or should I kind of stick it out in the dark for a couple days? And why was this? You know, their mismanagement has gone back to LIPA's creation. Back in the 1980s, LIPA was created to bail out the old Long Island Lighting Company from the bad decision it made to make a nuclear power plant that never opened up. So you've got the issue of what was the purpose of LIPA. It was kind of original sin, you know, bailing out bad decisions by both the government and the private sector going back 30 years. And then even if it had good management, which it didn't, does it have the money to invest in a better electrical system? It really doesn't, because they're paying off $4 billion worth of bailout debt from the original LILCO purchase. Mm-hmm. So that's $4 billion that you could have spent on putting power lines underground, building more substations, building a better computer network so that it can handle an outage better than it did. I mean, they were still using paper and pencil. Those were things that they could have spent the money on, but they couldn't because they're spending it on the bailout debt. So, you know, things that happened a long time ago matter, and people need to understand that, you know, not for punishment, but to make sure you don't make the same mistakes again, thinking it's not going to matter because it is.
Now, one of the less happy stories in terms of the city's response was the huge numbers of people downtown in what the city called Zone A, which is the area closest to the water, despite repeated calls by Mayor Bloomberg to evacuate, very few of them did evacuate, and then sure enough, they needed emergency assistance after the storm hit. Why didn't more people evacuate, and what can the city do differently next time in situations like that?
That was a huge failure, and it presents a challenge to the city. We've seen some stories that say the 911 system failed because people called and said, my house is flooding, or, you know, I've cut myself trying to run away, or can you please go check on my grandmother? I'm worried her house is flooding. And A, took a very long time to answer all these 911 calls, and two, in some cases they said it's going to be a while. And that is not a failure of the 911 system. It is not meant to handle this volume of calls. That is why you have a mandatory evacuation, so you don't get this huge volume of calls all at once. If you're calling living in Zone A and your house is flooding, you are not supposed to be there. And the evacuation compliance, you know, the city hasn't put out numbers, but all signs say it wasn't very good. You know, talking to people out in the Rockaways, people say 80% of their neighbors stayed at least for the first few days, and then they gave up with no power, and some of them mm-hmm. left. Why wasn't compliance good? One, for elderly, handicapped, other vulnerable populations, people are afraid to go to a shelter. You know, they think of it kind of for good reason as going to a homeless shelter, which most of us wouldn't do. You'd think of it as dangerous. You've got unfamiliar young people there. One thing the city could do better is have families-only or seniors-only shelters in the future. I think that would be good because it would alleviate the fear. And some of it is just not having had the experience of this before. You know, some people stayed for Irene last year or 2 years ago now. It wasn't that bad, so they just stayed again. Maybe they will leave next time, knowing how bad it can be. But it's complicated because people don't want to leave. They're worried about being looted, you know, mm-hmm. burglaries, things like that. You know, that is a huge problem, and it's one there's no real easy answer for.
Well, there's a lot more to your story, Nicole. I certainly encourage listeners to read the whole thing
Thank
at
you.
Our website, which is city-journal.org. And I've been speaking with Nicole Gelinas about her story, New York's Sandy Scorecard. Thanks, Nicole.
Thank you.